Welcome to the Should A Bet More podcast presented by Go Boys. Coming up on the show, Jason Weingarten, professional bettor, will join us. We will talk some baseballs. We are a couple weeks in, so we'll get his thoughts on futures, all these pitchers getting hurt, the Ohtani news, which came down on Thursday. So excited to talk to Jason, but actually going to start with a little NBA. Haven't done NBA in a while. And just so people know, I will be off next week, but we're going to have a couple episodes, have one Monday, have one Wednesday, and then be off Friday. So when I come back, we'll be already into the NBA playoffs and haven't done the NBA in a while. So just wanted to touch on it quickly. Wednesday night, Denver with a big win over Minnesota. Minnesota had a 3-point lead at the half, led by 5 or 7. And every time Minnesota needed a stop, they couldn't get it. Denver would just score, go at Gobert. The idea that Gobert is defensive player of the year, he was minus 5,000, whatever the hell he is, over Wembanyama is ridiculous. Wembanyama's the better defensive player. But this is a huge win because Denver now is going to be the one seed as long as they win both their games. And they have two pretty much layups against the Spurs and against the Grizzlies. Again, it's the NBA, you never know, but you figure they win these two. And even if they win one, Minnesota could lose one. Anyway, Denver's probably going to be the one here. And that makes it very hard to beat Denver. If Denver's going to have home court and be healthy, good luck, because the way to beat Denver was to make them play game 1 and 2 on the road, make them play a game 7 on the road. Then you have a chance if you're a Minnesota, Oklahoma City, maybe even Dallas. Dallas wouldn't have had it over them, but you get the idea. Get Denver out of their building, get them out of their comfort zone. Now that looks like that's not going to happen, as Denver is in prime position now to clinch this one seed and make the playoffs in the Western Conference go through them. Now Boston would have it in the finals against Denver, but in terms of just getting out of the West, it's going to be very tough, because now you have to go to Denver and win a game. And not only do you have to go to Denver and win a game, you got to win all your home games. So you got to hold serve, which is not easy. So I got to win all my home games, and I got to steal one in Denver. And if I lose one at home, now I got to steal two in Denver. Denver's probably going to the finals here. We're probably looking at a Boston-Denver final. The East is very weak. And again, we'll spend more time on these playoffs as they come along. But the East is just a mess. The Knicks are beat up with no Randall. I know Randall's not a fan favorite in terms of the Knicks fans, but that's a team. They didn't have enough talent to lose one of their core guys, lose a guy who's been an all-star multiple times. Now, maybe they can be feisty with Brunson, with Ananobi. Maybe they can bother somebody, but you know, Boston, you look around Boston's competition, Cleveland stinks. And these teams just 2 through 6 or 7 are jumbled. It's funny. Their toughest series might be round one, because they might be looking at either Philly or Miami in round one. Right now, we're looking at a playing game in the East, two playing games. Philly and Miami, the winner gets the 7. And look, if that holds, that'll be the scenario. And the loser would take on the winner of the Bulls-Hawks, which is just the most depressing game of all time. The Bulls and the Hawks is a playing game, which I believe was the playing game last year. Again, these are just, you're going to have 3 of the 4 same teams in the play-in as you did last year. Just a really, really sort of a depressing scenario here with these plays. So it was Bulls-Raptors last year. The Hawks beat the Heat, and then the Heat beat the Bulls. But you get the idea. But Boston, look, it's set up for them. They're minus 150 to win the East. I think actually that's a good bet, even though that's not, that's not sexy. That's not profound to sit there and lay 150 on a team to come out of the conference. It's basketball. Anything can happen. I understand that, but I don't see who knocks them off. And their toughest series might come early on, where they face the demons of a Miami team that's given them trouble, that beat them last year, almost beat them a couple years ago. Beat them in the bubble. So that might be the 1-8, Boston, Miami. And after that, though, like I said, Cleveland stinks. The Bucks are a mess, and now Giannis is hurt. I don't know where you're going for a team that can beat him. Maybe Philly with Embiid, if that could be the matchup, if you're looking for a sleeper. Embiid, can he get in good enough shape to where he was pre-injury? Probably not, and he never seems to come through in the playoffs anyway. He's always much worse in the playoffs than he is in the regular season, so it's setting up to be, and that would be a great final. It was almost the final last year. That would be a really good final. Boston looking to get off the schneid. They've come up short. They've been close, but no cigars so many times against the Denver team with Jokic that if it's established something now, look, going for back-to-back, that would be a great final. And we're going to get some good series along the way. Like the West is really good. Dallas has played really well. You've got the older teams, the Phoenix with Durant, Curry and LeBron with the Lakers and the Warriors. And that's probably going to be the 9-10 Lakers Warriors, where one of those teams gets bounced right away. We're looking at least of now at Suns Kings in the one playing game. That's the 7-8 winner gets in as the 7. Then the loser of that plays the winner of Lakers Warriors. That's probably going to be the 9-10. That's at least it's constructed now. So it's a double-edged sword for the league, because you do get LeBron versus Curry in a loser leaves town game, a single elimination. But and that's a good from an interest standpoint, a rating standpoint, that game will draw a lot of interest. but you lose one of them right away. Like either LeBron or Curry will not be in the playoffs. They're going to be out right away. That was a bad couple days here for the Lakers. They lost to Minnesota on Sunday. Then they lost to Golden State again on Tuesday night. Davis been in and out of the lineup. Now they've played well. They've got 10 games over 500. They've played well here. It's just the West is deep. The West is loaded. So we're going to have some good series, at least in the West. The West is deep. The West is really competitive, much better than it was last year, I would say. And, you know, once you get Wembanyama to get a team around him, look at these teams in the West. The West is going to be stacked for years to come with the Thunder and all their young talent. Denver's obviously not going anywhere. You know, where Luka with the Mavs, and it's a good conference this year. It's going to be a good playoff, and it's going to be a good conference for years to come here. And that's the one series we do kind of know here. We are looking at a Clippers Mavericks first rounder, which, look, that's been a series two times in the past 3 or 4 years. They played in the bubble. They played the year after the bubble. Luka was made them single-handedly competitive in that series. It's just Dallas could not get over the hump. Maybe this is the year where Clippers have been on and off lately. Luka and the trades they've made around the deadline to get Gafford to get Washington to shore up the rest of their team. Maybe Dallas can finally get him this year. And maybe Dallas is the one team that can beat Denver because they have the one guy in Luka that can, hey, I can put up 40 every night too, just like Jokic does. So we've seen Luka bring these teams up in the playoffs, whether it was a couple years ago going to the conference finals, even those two losses to the Clippers where the Clippers had much better teams. Luka made them competitive. So should be a fun playoffs, but I do think at the end, we're looking at Denver, Boston, especially with Denver on Wednesday night, doing everything but sewing up home court throughout with the big win against Minnesota. Tough loss for Minnesota because they had their chances, you know, up five, up seven in the second half. They just couldn't get to a spot where they're up 10 or 12 and they feel good about themselves. Every time they needed a bucket to extend the lead past that five or six or whatever, they couldn't get it. And Denver's just really good. When Murray's healthy and Denver's home and they're healthy, they're just like Gordon chips in, gives you enough. Jokic is obviously the best player in the sport. I know Luka's been great here, but Jokic is the best player in the sport with everything he can do. Murray's a good number two. He's not a great number two, but he's a good number two, and they have just enough around him to be the favorite to at least get to a final. I would still pick Denver even if it's Boston with home court, but that will be, I mean, there's a good chance that series goes seven. That will be a very competitive series. If that's the final, that would be a great final, but it's April. It's mid-April. That's a long way from here. So a lot of series along the way. A lot can happen. We saw that last year with, you know, the Heat beating the Bucks, the Heat beating the Celtics. There was a lot of upsets. Remember, even Phoenix was favored over Denver when Denver had home court. So, you know, what we think now maybe changes in a few weeks, but it should be a fun playoffs. We will cover it as the playoffs get closer. But coming up next, it is Jason Weingarten. We'll talk a little Otani, a little baseball awards, see what he's betting. That is next. This is the Should A Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should A Bet More podcast. Exciting to talk a little baseball. You can hear him on VSiN. You can catch him at Spreadopedia on Twitter. It is Jason Weingarten. Jason, what's going on, man?
What's going on? How's it going?
Everything is good. We'll get to baseball here in a minute in terms of betting, futures, awards, the usual, but we're recording this Thursday, late afternoon. Otani, the story keeps changing and breaking by the moment. We keep getting these more details. What is your takeaway from the latest here on Otani?
What is the latest on Otani? Well, let's see. They're filing charges against EP, the interpreter, federal. Looks like some sort of bank fraud. It's interesting. I haven't actually read the 37-page government indictment that's come out because I have a policy, a longstanding policy, that I refuse to read legal papers unless I'm billing for it or if my name is in them. And neither of those apply here, so I'm not going to go read through the 37 pages of this for my own entertainment, but I mean, there's really two avenues to explore here. The first is that Shohei Ohtani, as far as we know, has never been involved in anything illegal. It's all practical purposes, by all accounts, the greatest guy ever and the greatest baseball player and awesome. And, you know, nobody has anything bad to say about him. So if he says he's been taken advantage of, you know, on one hand, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. I truly believe that. You know, if there's any player in baseball that says, you know, hey, I didn't do this, I know how it looks, but I didn't do this, like, maybe it should be Ohtani. You know, I believe him. But I also know what being a gambler is like. I know plenty of other gamblers. I know what problem gambling behavior looks like. And I just cannot get past the idea here that the interpreter EP was gambling what seems to be like hundreds of millions of dollars now, they're saying, and that he stole, was it now $16 million, not 4.5, and they're saying he placed $180 million worth of bets, and the average bet size was $12,000, et cetera, et cetera. I can't comprehend being around somebody 24 hours a day and not having the remotest idea that that person was gambling 24/7. Cause I know what it looks like when somebody's looking at their phone, you know, gambling on soccer in the middle of the night. Anybody with a clue should have been able to pick up on this behavior. That's all I really got to say about that.
Yeah. It's when you're placing that many bets, I mean, that's very time consuming. It's placing the bets, it's checking the scores, checking account. It's not just, hey, you throw in 22 at a time and you're done for the day. That's like a full-time job. 22 bets a day is a lot of bets.
So I don't buy it. I want to give Ohtani the benefit of the doubt, but I don't buy it. And I mean, I just think that at the end of the day, this says a lot about Ohtani's agency, CIA, his actual agent, the business managers, the financial managers, everybody he had around him essentially failed him and allowed a casino school dropout to have complete control over Ohtani's life, or at least financial life, which I think that might be one of the craziest parts of the story is, you know, this isn't some backwater, you know, third rate California city or, you know, US city. This is Los Angeles, where, you know, you have the largest population of Japanese outside of Japan. I can't believe that Ohtani was getting this bad advice from his agency, from, you know, he had nobody in hit the local Japanese community that was saying, hey, this guy's shady. Hey, this is weird. I heard some things. I mean, I don't believe any of this, unfortunately. Like I said, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, and it looks like he found his fall guy. He's likely not going to face any serious repercussions from this, but I think at the end of the day, us gamblers will know that there's no world where bookies just give out unlimited credit to casino dealer school dropouts. So, you know, a lot of weird sort of pieces to this story, but honestly, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I don't care if Ohtani was gambling or not. It really isn't you know, it's not going to change my opinion of him one way or the other.
And that's the thing. I don't think a lot of people have talked about enough that, look, I mean, okay, he was betting, but unless he was betting on baseball, it's not like we have a potential point shaving thing. I mean, he's been the MVP 2 out of the last 3 years. Unless he's betting on baseball, unless he's betting on his own team. Like if he's betting on soccer and if he's losing, okay, like what's the difference? So if he was betting with DraftKings or FanDuel and losing all this money, nobody would care, but because he's doing it with a bookie now it's a big scandal. I don't know. I think that's not being talked about enough too, where it's like, okay, it's betting's not legal where he is, but I don't know. Betting is still legal in a lot of places. And look, he's not from here, so he might not know all the different customs. I go to one state, it's legal.
Yeah,
I go
okay.
to another, it's not.
That's the thing too, is there's so much like, oh, Tawny doesn't speak English. Oh, Tawny, you know, he doesn't know this and that. Like I think just a lot of that stuff, I'm like, come on, like we're holding Ohtani to a lower standard that we hold 22-year-old Dominicans. Like this is just, to me, a lot of this, I said it on Gil's show, it's sort of like infantilizing Ohtani. Like he's not able to think for himself. He needed somebody to help him with his bank accounts. Like, come on, this is a full-on adult with millions of dollars. Like if he can't manage to figure out English well enough to use his bank account in 10 years in America or however long he's been here now, like I really think he has the wrong people around him, starting with his agency. If they allow this all to happen for this long, like this is just absolute foolishness on top of foolishness. I don't know what else to say.
I agree with all that. I just mean like somebody who didn't grow up in the US, it's very, the lines are sort of blurred between what's legal and what's not. Like there's betting advertisement all over the place. Like, I know he knows not to bet on baseball, but it could be confusing for somebody who's not from here, doesn't know our customs, our culture. Like, okay, betting's legal. It's not legal. It's advertised everywhere. So that part of it, I do think there's some gray area, but the rest of it, I totally agree with.
The numbers are just so weird, though. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in volume with PPH bookies, and people are just kind of like trying to piece it together based off, you know, little pieces of information they know. And it just, like I said, Ohtani most likely found his fall guy, and that's the end of the story. But I think most gamblers just look at this and say this doesn't make any sense. What he was betting, how much he was betting, no one around him noticed. Like, I mean, like, I went to dinner a couple weekends ago in Vegas on a Saturday night and had a golf bet. It was like the Singapore Open. And I spent the entire dinner just looking at my phone because I cared more about the Singapore Open than I did about being at the steakhouse. You know, it just that stuff happens. But I can't imagine like going out and hanging out, being around 24 hours a day with EP and not noticing like, boy, this guy really cares about this French second division soccer game, you know, or whatever he was betting. It's just doesn't add up to me. I'm just going to say it's suspicious and move on with my day.
Yep. Last part of this, but then we'll move on because this just came out. Jeff Passan tweeted a little blurb here. He says, this is from the report, on or about March 20th, 2024, Mizuhara, who is the interpreter, messaged Bookmaker One stating, "Have you seen the reports?" Bookmaker One responded, "Yes, but that's all bullshit. Obviously, you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it." Mizuhara then responded to Bookmaker One, "Technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me." You make of that what?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for every PPH bookie in the world, just the ones I've interacted with, but I've never met a PPH bookie that was like, "You need to go out there and steal from your friend to pay me back," you know. Which is very possible. Maybe the bookie was encouraging him to steal. I don't know. I can't say I know any of these people. I really have never met him, never, you know, even met anybody that knows him for the most part. But I just can't imagine that a bookie, a PPH bookie who already knows he's, you know, dealing in a gray, potentially illegal area, would encourage one of his clients to steal money to pay him back, you know, create a larger felony out of this already illegal behavior, let alone encouraging him to steal from a celebrity/athlete, you know, one of the most recognizable faces in baseball at the moment. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, why, as a bookmaker, even if you're owed that money, you would not want to get yourself into this situation that you're already in, essentially, where now, you know, you're probably never getting that money. You know, you're never getting that money back from EP now. Like, not that you ever were, if, you know, even if it was his. I don't know. I just, like I said, I think it's a weird situation. There's a lot of questions that are kind of unanswered, and it's suspicious, but everyone gets what they want out of this. Ohtani doesn't get suspended. Baseball doesn't have the largest scandal it's had in, you know, a decade or however long, maybe since the steroids. So everyone gets what they want out of this. We get to move on with our day. And, you know, it's just a sort of a weird blip on Ohtani's career at the end of things.
All right, let's go back on the field and betting. Thursday was a really rough slate. Astros might be in some trouble. We have these teams that we can bet against pretty much any day, but I'll start with awards. Awards, futures, have you added anything as we're like 2 weeks into the season? Any awards here?
Yeah, I did a little addition this week. I really wish I had started writing something for VSiN this week, and then the week gets away from me. And I always have trouble with the writing because, like, you write something on Monday or Monday afternoon, and then a whole slate of Monday games start. You know, a bunch of pitchers do something, and then half the stuff I said about Cy Young is irrelevant. And I hate doing that with articles where I write something and it comes out and it's already, you know, worthless, whatever I wrote, or, you know, a section I wrote. So I ended up just not writing anything this week. But I was going to write about some of the bets I made. And one of the bets I made, I parlayed Juan Soto and Corbin Burns. Soto MVP, Burns Cy Young. Pays about 21 to 1. I think pays 21, 21.36 right now at FanDuel. So I wanted to play around with a couple parlays, stuff like that. Took about a week, maybe 2 weeks, for Soto and Judge to really flip each other in the AL MVP market. The rest of the numbers, you see contenders. I really think Jordan Alvarez should probably be second ahead of Judge. But other than that, pretty much in agreement with the top four or five guys. Mike Trout, interestingly enough, is back up near the top too. I think he's 12-1, fifth lowest odds at FanDuel. But you get kind of the similar situation to the last couple of years with Otani. What sort of numbers does Mike Trout have to put up on a potentially really bad team to win another MVP? Guess we're going to find out. But he is kind of putting up some on-pace 40-40 numbers, if I'm not mistaken, you know, obviously through 2 weeks of the season. But something worth paying attention to.
Yeah, 12-1 here at DraftKings to win MVP. He's I think it's 6 homers already, but again, you do have to kind of hold your breath here with his health, because he hasn't really played 140, 150 games in a very long time. So anything else? We got Holiday called up from the Orioles. Any of the Rookie of the Year stuff catch your eye?
So I'm actually kind of slightly annoyed with myself. Holiday drifted out to 5-1 this week. And I had been telling some of the people I bet with, you know, hey, now's probably the time to grab Holiday 5-1. He's coming up. You know, I follow the AAA, so I see what's going on at Norfolk every day. And I knew he was coming up. I really expected about another 2 weeks from now. I thought more of the end of the month as opposed to middle of the month. But, you know, Holiday coming up, obviously likely going to be first or second in the Rookie of the Year voting. Langford, Carter, probably one of those two or the other guys at the top. So honestly, no, I wouldn't bet Jackson Holiday now. If you didn't get 5-1 at the beginning of the week, I wouldn't play 3-1. I don't think 3-1 is good enough for you know, just playing it straight right now. If you wanted to sort of play around and parlay him with something, you know, that might be more interesting. But I think this market is reasonably priced with Langford, Holiday, and Carter likely to be your top two in some order. In the National League, I think the National League is slightly more interesting, because you got like Shota Imanaga, who's playing well so far.
He's good.
And Yamamoto's had 2 good starts, making up for that first start in Korea. But again, I've said this so many times, like the amount of things that have to go right for a pitcher to win Rookie of the Year versus having one bad start. And everybody has a bad start, you know, sooner or later, 2 bad starts or 3 bad starts, whatever. You can't convince me to bet Yamamoto or Imanaga 260 or 7-1. That's what I see right now. Jackson Churio, plus 410, kind of interesting. I mean, I would really make some props. Total, you know, number of Jacksons to win Rookie of the Year is 0, 1, or 2, is between Churio, Merrill, and Holiday. You got some interesting dudes there. Merrill's a guy I bet him at like 45-1, 40-1, 50-1. He's 12 now at FanDuel. Playing well, you know, his numbers are really good. A lot of hard hit balls, but you know, he's not running away with it or anything. I think 12, probably reasonable. The only guy I truthfully find any value is Paul Skeens. Is that how we say it?
Yep.
It's Skeens. Always confuses me, but he's 30-1 at FanDuel. He was 40-1 last week, and His numbers are good. If you want a pitcher, he's the pitcher I would go with at a big number, because he is coming in the next couple weeks. You know, if someone's going to unseat the guys at the top, it might be him. The only other name besides that, James Woods, he's back out to like 45-1. I want to say he's hitting like 424 in AAA right now. He's on fire. Just a question of when the Nationals decide he's ready for major league at bats. might be a little too late to really compete with some of the names up top. But keep in mind, like, guy like Michael Harris didn't show up till what, like May?
June, even, yeah, late May.
Was it the
June,
beginning of June? Like, it might have been like June 3rd even or something. But it is possible for guys to come up a month from now and really compete in this race. That's why, like, I always like to tell people, don't get too committed to your rookie of the year positions in the beginning of April, because, you know, a lot of times the actual contender hasn't even been called up yet.
Yep. I think that's well put. How about Cy Young? You got pitchers' arms exploding all over the place. I mean, we're a couple weeks into the season. Last Saturday, I remember looking up at the calendar. It's April 6th, and we had Eury Pérez, Strider, Bieber. I mean, all pretty much done. I don't know that Strider's not definitive yet, but the other two done for the year. I'd be surprised if we saw Strider the rest of the year. I wouldn't say it's unbettable, but for me personally, I'm curious what you think, obviously. Unless I'm getting 30, 40, 50 to one, I'm probably going to be a little bit careful, at least till June or July, where I know my guy's going to be healthy, because you got to have to pitch 85, 90% plus of the season. So it's made me more cautious to bet this award. Is this the injuries taking effect on you, or it doesn't faze you?
You know, I bet Shane Bieber last week, and immediately, like the
in
day
some
after,
I think that's in some trouble.
Yeah, the next day, immediately announced he's hurt and done. And I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, well, that's $250 down the drain. It's going to happen. You know, if you don't take risks like that, you're not going to win ever. But you also have to, you know, accept that there's unknowns in the market and guys are pitching hurt and you don't know what's going on with their arms. And that's just the nature of throwing baseballs at this point, you know, unfortunate, but nothing you can do. It doesn't prevent me from betting the Cy Young. And you know, when it comes to Cy Young, like, Gil was asking me the same thing, like does this make you stop and, you know, bet less or whatever? No, because I think the Cy Young is the easiest of the three markets to beat. You have the Tom Tango stuff, which basically is going to tell you, you know, who the top pitchers are every day of the season. And all you have to do is look at that, and you'll have a pretty good idea who the Cy Young contenders are. It's not a question of who I like. You know, when people ask me who I like, I just say, well, who's at the top of the Tom Tango stuff this week? It's likely going to be from that group of guys. You know, we've basically got past relievers ever having any value in this market, so you don't ever have to make the case that, you know, well, this guy's pitching so well, it doesn't matter, don't care, you know. Just focus on who the top starters are. And, you know, at the beginning of the season or before the season, one of the two, I bet Tyler Glasnow. I bet Corbin Burnes, just because those are guys I like. I bet those, you know, guys the same years, several years in a row now. Cole Reagans, I bet, because I do this thing where I let any of my friends, my close friends, bet anything they want with me for a dollar. And I give them the best odds. Like, whatever you want, I'll let you bet it for a dollar. So I gave one of my friends Cole Reagans to win the Cy Young at 100 to 1. So now I'm on the hook for that, actually. And he's actually like, what, 10 to 1 now or something? He's a contender. So, like, I have some money on him. The only guy I missed, actually, that I had a preseason circle on, I got Chris Sale too, by the way. Speaking of the, you know, teams and disappointments, what's going on with the Braves and their pitching staff? I'm patting myself on the back early for my 9 to 1 miss the playoffs on the Braves. You know, they have some pitching problems, but my point is with the Cy Young stuff, you know, Chris Sale, I'm happy about that position now, but Jordan Hicks, that was the only guy I missed. I almost bet him at 300 to 1 for Cy Young before the season. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't really want to throw money at that. I ended up betting Tyler Glasnow, so I don't know if that was good or bad, but Tyler Glasnow does look pretty good so far, so I'm not really upset about it.
To strike out 14 guys on 88 pitches, no walks, that's almost like mathematically impossible. And he did that, I think it was Tuesday night against the Twins. That's one of the more dominant pitching performances you'll ever see. If anyone out there had Hunter Brown or has Hunter Brown for Cy Young, your ticket took a little bit of a hit on Thursday, just a slight bump in the road, 9 hits, 11 runs in the first inning. He only recorded 2 outs. If the runners,
I have Hunter Brown on my fantasy team.
Oh, yeah. And the runners got stranded too. Bad. He gave up a homer to give up like the ninth run. Usually, all right, nine runs. We're not going to embarrass the guy. We get him out of here. It happened so fast. I think they couldn't get him out of the game. He gave up two more hits. And then finally they brought up a reliever. If the reliever didn't strand the runners, he would have given up 11 runs, which, I mean, you're talking all time bad stuff there.
Yeah, that kind of ruined my my fantasy day. I also started Kyle Friedland on opening day, so I'm kind of in the hole in a bad way in fantasy baseball to start the year.
Last one before we get you out of here, and I haven't had any luck facing anybody that has these days. My pitchers aren't doing well, and I never face a Hunter Brown. That's it's a lot of the luck in this. Last one though, any teams that jump out to you, good or bad? Are you fading these White Sox, Rockies, A's of the world? Any teams, good or bad, jump out to you? Yankees and Pirates playing well. Some of these teams that are really bad. Any sides that you recommend, or any way you get at attacking these teams that you like or don't like?
I saw something about the Yankees. I don't know if you saw it, about the last time they jumped out to a start like this, or the last two times they jumped out to a start like this, they won the American League. Maybe that's all it takes, is getting Juan Soto to win the American League. Could just be that simple. I'm interested in the American League East race because, you know, obviously, like I just mentioned, the Yankees got Juan Soto. He's very much an MVP contender. And it's interesting because if you've ever listened to me talk, you know I love Juan Soto. In the last couple of years, either being on the Nationals, being on bad teams, or being on the Padres and being on disappointing teams, he has not garnered the support for MVP that he deserves. Now he gets traded to the Yankees, and it really just is something about playing in New York and being on the Yankees that some guys just kind of boost their game. And you know, look at him. He's 3.5 to 1 for MVP all of a sudden. He keeps it up, stays healthy. I think he wins the MVP. But, you know, like I said, I like the Yankees. I like the Orioles. The Orioles are not done calling up prospects. They got a couple other guys, Colby Mayo, Connor Norby, and a couple other guys I can keep listing. But they got a pretty big pool of talent coming up. The Astros have been a little bit of a disappointment. I don't know what's going on there. Like you said, today it was a disaster. That's just something to keep an eye on. Obviously, the Dodgers likely going to win the National League West. Not a ton to talk about there. Pirates, I'm pretty happy with the Pirates right now. O'Neill Cruz was one of my MVP picks before the season. He's not totally kind of jumped into the race, but Pirates 9-3. If they keep that up, maybe something comes of that. Then obviously the Marlins. I'm really, really, really annoyed with the Marlins and myself, because last year, like my biggest win total bet was Marlins under. I had a ton of Marlins stuff. Really screwed me there. And their record in one run games was extraordinarily good last year, like abnormally positive variance. And this year they're getting all that negative variance back that they got lucky with last year and then some. And you know, the general manager left, Derek Jeter left, Skip Schumacher is leaving. It's just a question of if he makes it through the season or not. This entire team is likely going to look different in a couple months. They're going to trade anybody and everybody. It's so rare to see a team and their beat writers and their fans talk with such defeat 2 weeks into the season. You know, normally you expect this sort of behavior in August or September, not April. But the Marlins and their fans and the beat writers and everybody are already talking about, you know, radically blowing up this team and what they have to do for the future. Yeah, it's really bad. 2-11 is about as bad as you can be in baseball to start the season. And yeah, we can already cross them off the list of playoff teams, obviously.
2-11, but on a one-game winning streak. Yeah, people are going to say, hey, you know, Kim Ng, and when she was – I think she decides, like, to step down because they offered her a demotion and she didn't want to take it. People are kind of doing their victory lap, like, oh, you shouldn't have let her go. Well, she put together most of this team. The teams were not good she had before last year. And like you said, last year they were lucky. So I think that's a lot of people, you know, clutching their pearls that she was let go. I don't know that. Look, I was surprised she let go. She was let go, or, you know, wasn't retained. But this idea that, you know, she's some great GM and how dare they let her go, I think is a little bit overblown.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she probably wasn't given a serious budget to be able to compete, especially with the other teams in the division. You know, like there's really only so much you can do when you're limited with what you can acquire and how much you can spend. And they still made the playoffs last year. So that's really crazy. But
I think that's a nice young pitching, but the pitching's all hurt.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you have 450, you're starting rotation, including, you know, a guy like Yuri Perez and a Cy Young winner, and they all get hurt, then you're going to see some drop off. Like, that's just part of baseball. But also, it's a bad job. It's a bad team. It's bad management, bad ownership. When you have an owner, a guy like Derek Jeter, who leaves and gives up equity, it tells you a lot about the situation. So, like, I don't blame her for leaving. It's not a job that anybody really wants. It's not exciting. Like, I don't want to go work for the Marlins. Like, you want to go work for the Marlins and be miserable every day and go to work, and like it's got to suck to work there in the front office. Like, you know, especially when, like I said, you're competing against the Braves and the Phillies, and they're going out and signing Trey Turners and Chris Sales, and you know, you're not. So it's just not a fun place to be for anybody.
Yeah, and their whole thing always was they would build it up, they'd win, and they trade it, and they you know, restart the cycle and get younger players and do it all over again where they never have to pay them. But it's like you said, they're competing with, like, you know, the Mets, the Braves, and you know, these other teams, the Phillies, all big markets. It's just the Dodgers are in their league. It's not easy. But
don't forget, though, that's a viable strategy, the building it up, selling them off when they, like, that's a totally, it's not cool, but it's totally legitimate strategy in professional baseball when it works. They're just not executing that strategy at this point. They're not really executing anything at all.
Yeah, it's almost like the rookie quarterback in the NFL where, hey, you draft him, you get 3 or 4 years, but then when it's time to pay him, you trade him and you get someone else. So I get it. Jason, I'll let you go, man. This was fun. We got to do this again soon. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Spreadopedia on Twitter. I'm on VSiN on Numbers Game with Gil. And that's pretty much it for now.
All right, man. Appreciate it. We'll do it again soon. All right, that'll do it. Thank you to Jason Weingarten. We'll be back Monday as I head on vacation, but we got a couple shows for you Monday, Wednesday, off Friday. So don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. See you next week.